Avodah Zarah, Per Gimel, Mishnah Vav 3:6. Our mission here is considering what happens if a person is a direct neighbor with a idolatrous temple. And when we say neighbor here, we mean that they're actually sharing a wall. Okay? So their home and the temple share a wall. And that temple is going to have a status even of being an idol itself, meaning that they worship the place, not just the objects within the place. So you can imagine it's like a big empty room where it's the temple of so-and-so idol, and people go there to commune with or communicate with, whatever, this is the idol. The place itself is venerated, so they're worshiping the actual structure and location, and not just what's inside of it. So what happens if Mishahaya Beso Samach L'Avodah Zarah, a person is abutting neighbors, meaning they share a wall with an idolatrous temple that has been worshipped as an idol, the Nafal, and the shared wall collapses. So, says the Mishnah, Asul of Noso, you're not allowed to build the wall anew, because that would be essentially aiding in the reconstruction of the temple, which at a minimum would be Lifnei Iver, because you're facilitating the way of the idolaters to worship their idol. Could be worse than that, because you're essentially benefiting idols directly if you're rebuilding this wall here, and it's just like an idolatrous temple itself. The case, by the way, we're talking about over here is where the person, the Jew, was there first, and then his next door neighbor built the house which was abutting his, then was converted into a temple. Because it would be forbidden for one to essentially build a house adjacent to an existing temple, because you'd be benefiting from the wall that you're sharing. But the Jew was there first, he did it b'heter, but now his wall has fallen down, he wants to reconstruct his home. What does he do? Ketzad ya'aseh, says the Mishnah, so what should he do? Konas besoch shelo arba amos. He should retreat within his property line 4 amos, like 6 feet, and then retreat it in that space. Uvona. Then he can build a new wall for his home. The reason why is because if he build a wall in the same property line, then essentially the neighboring temple would be able to essentially even use less materials or lean up against or share that wall, all of which would be forbidden, as I said before. So you have to retreat in. Many girsos in the Mishnayos and the Rishonim don't have this arba amos shir. They don't say it has to be 4 amos, it just has to be retreated in, meaning so that if your wall stands low without any neighbors touching it on your property, then there's no reason that you're helping the Avodah Zarah. But according to our girsa here, it's a full 4 amos, so that leaves quite a lot of space there. So we'll say what you have to do with that space in a moment, which is you have to make it that there's no benefit that is sort of devolving on the temple, the idolatrous temple. What happens if, you know, if you retreat in some feet, so then the temple, when it rebuilds, will essentially expand into your property, onto your property line potentially. So what you have to do is you have to retain your rights, enforce your rights, not give up any of your land, but you can't build there. And so what you'll do is you'll put something useless and that retains your property. For example, you plant thorn bushes over there, or you convert it into like a latrine, a place, you know, a toilet for little children to use. Can't make for adults, because then they need to have the walls to give them the privacy that they need, which is like what you can't build, the walls there. So you basically fill it up with, you know, thorns or excrement and the like, so they can't benefit, and you have not let them grow or expand their base of Avodah Zarah in any way. Now, if the situation is Haya Shalova Shal Avodah Zarah, if the wall itself or the place under the wall itself was a shared space, so in other words, the wall was, let's say, 2 feet thick, and, you know, 1 foot belonged to you and 1 foot belonged to the temple. So that means that your half of the thickness of the wall, meaning your 1 foot, counts towards you. Nidon kemechtza al mechtza. We consider the wall to be 50-50, meaning that if you have to retreat in, you know, let's say 6 feet, let's just, whatever, let's call it 6 feet. So then one of the feet is where the wall was before. Okay, that's the idea. If it's 7 feet, then it still counts as one. The point is that you can use your space, but not the other idolatrous temple's space, towards a calculation. Now, as far as the rubble, what goes with that? So there's really two separate issues. One issue is that anything that was used as an idol, or even as a, you know, support for an idol, adoring an idol and the like, is usur bahana. You can't get benefit from it. But there's a separate thing which this mission is introducing right now, which is midura banan. An idol gets the status of being tame, midurabanan. So if this was an idolatrous temple where the temple itself was worshipped, so then the stones themselves are asur bahana. So which would mean, if you can recognize your stones, you know, your building materials, your bricks, you can keep them and reuse them. But that stuff which you don't recognize would all be asur, because it's a tarovis, it's a mixture of Isser and Heter, and you can't take, since Asr Bahana, the whole mixture becomes forbidden to get benefit from, so you cannot take, you know, you can't take any of the stones. But what you do recognize, you could take. Separately, what you could do is you could, you know, essentially sell it to the temple next door, your share, because you're not benefiting from that. It was yours legally already. So if all the rubble is worth $100 and half it's yours, but you don't know which half, you can't take it, but you could say, listen, give me $50 and I'll give you the rubble. That would be okay. Okay. Now, our mission is saying that the rubble itself, however, because it conveys tumah, we have to recognize that as a separate thing besides hana, and that's rabbinic. The question is, how does it convey tumah? Like, based on which parameter? So there are basically two options as far as the mission is concerned, which is, does it convey tumah only by direct contact, maga, or does it also convey tumah by indirect contact, by which I mean bearing its weight or carrying it? That's masa. So in other words, the paradigm for maga is the sheretz, the one of those eight creepy crawlies like rodents and reptiles and the like, which the Torah enumerates specifically. When they're dead, they convey tumah if you touch them. But if you carry them in your backpack, you never touch them directly, but they're just a dead rat in your backpack, you wouldn't be tummy. Or the other possibility is, essentially what's referred to essentially as the nida. So the nida, what's relevant to our mission here, is that a nida conveys tumah not just by direct contact, but even by bearing her weight. So if she's in your backpack, or she's on the other side of the seesaw, or whatever it is, if you're bearing her weight, so then again you become tummy. So what the tumah of Avodah Zarah, is it just the lesser form of direct contact maga, or does it also convey tumah v'masa? So derabanan, and so there'll be machlokas here regarding which pasuk we use as the asmachta, as like the, you know, the source in the pasuk, not to teach us, but the rabbis like hung it onto that idea. So the Tanakhama is going to go that it's like a sheretz, says the Mishnah inside. Avana v'eitzav and v'afaro, it's rocks, eitzav are its timbers, the wood, v'afaro, the dust, whatever it is, that's inside that wall. Metamin kasheretz, they convey tumah like a sheretz, meaning by direct contact. We do not mean, by the way, that it's a ka'adasha and a lentils amount as a sheretz would convey. No, it would be also in a kazayas amount, an olives amount, like any other mace, like a corpse, because elsewhere the psukim do refer to Avodah Zarah as if it were like zivchei mesim, as like it's dead people. But in terms of the tumah mode of transmission, it's just like direct contact, which is unique to sheretz. I mean, it's like sheretz, not like a corpse, which conveys other times other ways as well. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, this is the sort of the asmachta, the allusion in the psukim, if you will, that the rabbis wanted to lean this din on. It says in Chumash Devarim, Perek Zayin, pasuk Chavav, shaketz tishaktsenu, which means something like you should be like disgust. It should be disgusting to you and repugnant, repulsive to you, the idol. But a sheketz, which means like a creepy, crawly, gross thing, is really kind of related to like a sheretz. They're not the same. Shkatzim or any old creepy, crawly, gross thing, like a tarantula. A tarantula isn't one of the Shemona Shratzim, but it's also a sheketz. And the Shemona Shratzim are also little creepy crawlies, but a specific list. So they're connected. And the point is, since the pasuk in Devarim is equating the idol to like a sheketz, we say it's like a sheretz, in as much as it conveys to him by direct contact. Rabbi Akiva is more strict. He says the rabbinic enactments for the conveyance of tumah from an idol isn't just by maga, but also masa, bearing its weight, based on kenida, as like a nida, a woman who's a nida, menstruating, so she is conveying tumah by masa as well. Shneimar, the pasuk is, this is a pasuk in Yishai. Yishai talks about getting rid of one's idols and being disgusted by them and getting tummy from them. And it says, tizrem kamo dava. You should, you know, scatter them, your idols, and distance them from you. Kamo dava, like the menstruating woman who sits apart at a distance from the rest of from her husband, because now she's menstruating. Tzei tomer lo, this is Yishaya saying to the people, he's saying, tell your idols, get out of here, get lost. So the point is, that's the pasuk, you should send it away. But the point is, since we're using the word dava, which is like a woman who is menstruating, which is distant, so the idea is that you should also convey tumah like that, which is by masa as well. Manida matama b'masa, just as anida can be tumah also by bearing its weight. Af avodah zarah matama b'masa, so too does avodah zarah. Lahalacha, we say that avodah zarah only conveys tumah by maga, direct contact, not like Rabbi Akiva. The shear is a kazaras, like I said before. So that's that. Now, one other small point. In terms of the rabbanan that says that the stones of this idolatrous temple would be a source of tumah. So you might ask, wait a second. Although we understand that there's a isur d'orais against getting benefit, and therefore, if there's a mixture of stones, we can't use any of them. There's no such thing as what's called breira when it comes to d'orais. So you can't sort of retroactively allocate and say, you know, some stones are, half the stones are mine, half are its, and we'll take the half that are not mine be the ones that are usr and the ones that are tame. So that'd be breira. But there isn't, we don't allow breira for a d'orais. That's why you only can make use of the stones you recognize. The ones you don't recognize, you have to treat as usr. Okay? Question is, since the tumah issue is that's a derabanan, we should allow for brera, we should say take your half of the stones and not treat them as tameh, treat the other half as the tameh stones, if you will. But you see from here that the rabbis were very strict, at least when it came to the tumah of Avodah Zarah, that they said they wouldn't allow brera to be effective. So we're saying even the stones themselves, we assume are tameh, all of them, even though it's only derabanan, and we don't apply the principle of brera here.